Last spring, the General Assembly's 2021 session ended with Indiana in the grips of COVID, with lawmakers hell-bent on curbing executive branch authority, and with the state's treasury bulging from an unexpected shot of pandemic-related revenue. Sound familiar? 8 months later, as the 2022 session begins, it is, as Yogi Berra famously said, deja vu all over again. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and this is Indiana Lawmakers, the state's longest-running public affairs show. We'll start the season, as we always do, with the aspirations, predictions, and warnings of the General Assembly's four caucus leaders. So don't go away. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house. As I mentioned at the outset, the 2022 session is picking up pretty much where the 2021 session left off. And not surprisingly, therefore, the same goes for us, as we once again glean the insights of the General Assembly's four caucus leaders. Now, longtime viewers will notice one slight difference. Instead of sitting down with me here in the studio, my first guests of the new season are, due to COVID concerns, joining us via Zoom. I am pleased to welcome, remotely at least, House Speaker Todd Houston, a Fishers Republican, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta, a Fort Wayne Democrat, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray, a Martinsville Republican, and Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor, an Indianapolis Democrat. I thank you all for joining us on what I know is a busy week for you all. Let's start with COVID. How can we not start with COVID? This state is still in a crisis by all measures, and the same goes for that matter for the rest of the country. So, Todd Houston, let me ask you this. How do we reconcile the fact that hospitals are full? We are at some record levels, in fact, for the month of December at many hospitals across the state. I saw this week the Associated Press quoted the head of the Indiana chapter of the American College of Cardiology is saying the unvaccinated are killing us. We're overwhelmed. How do you reconcile that situation with your caucus's top legislative priority, which is ending the public health emergency, which has been in place since March of 2020?
Well, first of all, John, it's great to be here this morning, and I wish we were in person, but this is the state of the world as it is. So a couple things relating to that. So first of all, ending the public health state of emergency, you know, in doing that, there's really only three components of that are left. And we address each of those three components in House Bill 1001. So while it may feel important, it really becomes more symbolic to be in that state of emergency because doctors, nurses, hospitals, Hoosiers, in government all have the same opportunities and to address issues the same way they've always done it. You'll notice no difference from one day to the next when the public health emergency ends.
Well, so, you mentioned symbolism and the importance of symbolism here.
Yep.
That also brings up a question of optics. When you were first pushing this and your caucus was rolled this out as the top priority, things were a little better than they are now. I think we've had 160% jump or more in hospitalizations just in the past month. Are you worried about the optics? Do you wish you had a mulligan and could go back in the time machine and say, yeah, it's still important, but maybe we didn't need to make it such a top priority?
No, John, because I think we're at the stage of this where this is about personal responsibility. I mean, this isn't about government actions. I mean, I think if you look across the country, across the world for that matter, I mean, different people have tried to do different things in regards to COVID and stopping the spread. You know, the people have taken the most draconian steps and face the same, as you noted earlier, the same issues regarding hospitalization and cases that people have taken less restrictive steps have taken. So I think, you know, we fell into this trap of believing we're going to control and determine how a virus will act. And we see case after case of people that are fully vaccinated with booster shots who've had COVID, who are catching it again, John. I mean, this is a time, you know, we are going to live in a world where COVID exists. We have to do it. The great thing is there are things like the vaccinations and other treatments that we now have at our disposal. But when it gets down to it, we're long past government action. And you know, people need to take the personal responsibilities that they feel are right for them to address the world living in COVID.
Well, Phil Giaquinta, the speaker talks about House Bill 1001, which is the bill we're talking about here, and the steps that are being taken to ensure that even in the absence of a gubernatorial emergency order, that federal dollars, for instance, for Medicaid or food assistance are still in place and that kids can still go to vaccine clinics en masse and voluntarily get shots. So I'm guessing, Phil Giaquinta, that part may be okay. One thing we haven't talked about that's probably the more controversial aspect of HB 1001 is the what amounts to a prohibition, I guess, so we can argue about the semantics, on private employers and their ability to mandate testing. Phil Giaquinta, am I reading that right, that maybe the first part of the bill might be a little easier for your caucus to swallow than the second?
Yeah, I think, excuse me, I think you are reading it right. When we talk about personal responsibility, I think that also applies to employees have a responsibility when they are working for an employer, and the employer says, you know, we need to, in order to keep this business running, particularly the healthcare industry, hospitals, nursing home care facilities, those type of facilities that are caring for the elderly and the sick. They say, you know, to their employees, we really need you to be vaccinated or we're going to be in big trouble. And as you stated earlier, this is now a pandemic really about the unvaccinated. And one of the concerns I've had about this, you know, 1001 and the message that is sent is that there have been more talk about opting out of the vaccine. And that's really, I don't think, the message that we want to send. And if we want to keep the economy moving, if we want to keep folks employed and not going back to where we're having to dip into our state coffers and help folks out that way, because we really do want people to be able to work. We want the economy to move. We want to be back to normal. Folks have to get vaccinated, and that may require employers to say, you need to be vaccinated or else.
Rod Bray, I look at your caucus's agenda, and you point out that you want to end the emergency order. You use the word responsibly. But the platform or the agenda does not include any reference to the other part of HB 1001, which we just talked about, the what critics would say would be applying handcuffs to business owners who want to operate in a particular manner. Indiana is an at-will state. Traditionally, Republican caucus has, in both the House and Senate, have been supportive of that. What can we read into the fact, Rod Bray, that the responsible rollback of the order, yes, and then the rest, kind of silence on that part of it. Does that suggest that that would be a sticking point for your caucus?
Yeah, well, we're going to have a conversation, a very serious conversation about the vaccine mandate. I expect it to come over in House Bill 1001, and we'll take a look at that. I'm happy to talk more in detail about that. But to your specific question, the reason we put the bill just simply ending responsibly the emergency orders is we felt we needed some line that we could move through relatively quickly. When you add that piece of the vaccination mandate to it, that it makes it a heavier bill because it's another idea that takes a lot of discussion. And there's a lot of merit to it because we need to thread the needle in some way to say employers should have the ability to kind of control their environment, but there needs to be some options for those employees who feel like they have a medical reason for an exception, a religious-based reason for the exception. All those things need to be out there for those employees as well. So we'll take that up and discuss it in earnest when it comes over in the House bill, but we wanted something streamlined to deal with the emergency orders right now.
Well, not often that your caucus would be, supporters of that portion of the prohibition would be at odds with, for instance, the State Chamber of Commerce, which is, again, historically, traditionally, I won't say in lockstep with your caucus, but certainly there's some echoes of policy in those regards. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Greg Taylor. Things we are told by leadership are back to normal. The plexiglass is gone. The public hearing rooms are open. some of the Senate, your colleagues don't have to sit in the balcony anymore, and the House is back from their Indiana Government Center South location back in the chamber. Do you feel safe? Does your caucus feel safe with the return to, well, let's call it normal?
Well, first of all, thank you for having us again today. I feel safe. I've been vaccinated. I've been boosted. I'll get a booster again if it becomes necessary, if responsible healthcare officials tell me that that's important. But unfortunately, we still have some people who believe that this situation is not what it is, which is it's a crisis. We have hospitals that are busting at the seams. And, I want to make sure that we understand that as legislators, people look to us to give them guidance in a lot of cases on what to do. And I think that it just sends the wrong message, what we're starting with, including other matters that we may get to in this discussion. But this is a very troubling time for me. I feel safe. I just hope that my colleagues are safe and we won't have to see a few of my colleagues on the floor because we're so close and very few people are wearing masks and they won't be able to come back.
Well, Todd Houston, to that point, you said this week that we're back. You know, it's business as normal. We're going to work hard. We're going to be aggressive. No circumstance where you would see not doing what you always do. Is that really the case? No circumstance that would cause you to go back to plexiglass shields or a temporary return to video testimony or those sorts of things? I mean, this is a commitment to what we see this week is what we're going to have for the next 9-plus weeks.
John, I mean, I can't predict the future perfectly. And if we came into having staffing issues, that would be something different. But, John, first of all, I mean, you know, I want to say that it does not prohibit. House Bill 1001 doesn't prohibit employers from requiring a vaccination.
No.
It just allows for proper, you know, allows for exemptions and gives employees its rights.
Makes it more difficult to enforce, or almost impossible. Well,
potentially, you're giving employee the rights, but here's a second thing. I think, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Joe Biden said he's going to stop the virus, right? Well, look, the virus is going to do what the virus does. And we are going to have to live in it. Our kids have to get back in schools. We've seen the dramatic impact, both from a mental health, from an educational standpoint, of what these actions that we've taken, you know, and we have to move forward. And in our small portion of the world, we can control how we move forward. And we have to demonstrate that. And you know what? When restaurants are full, when there's 68,000 people at the Colts game, when you walk through the malls and the Christmas holidays, they were full, which is all great to see. And people are ready to go back. We need to interact with each other. We need to see each other. You know, and I think it's critical. I think we've got to move forward. There, again, the great news is there are ways, if you are concerned, you can protect yourself. Please be vaccinated. Please, if you feel the need, wear a mask. Do what you need to do. As a society, we have got to move forward. Every day in the paper or in the news, you read the consequences of the actions of not moving forward.
Right, right. Well, and I should point out to your point about it's not being technically a prohibition. You're right. There are members of your caucus, for instance, that don't think the bill that's been authored, I think co-authored by 56 members of your caucus, they see that as too much of a middle road that they want to see. Perhaps making workers who don't want to get vaccinated a protected class under Indiana statute. So I, you're right.
It's to speak to the economics of it, John. I talk to employers all the time who say if we have a mandate, if you force us to have a mandate, we won't have a staff. If we have enough supply chain issues today. The last thing we need to do is provide more challenges to the economic supply chain.
All right, well, let's so much to cover here. We wouldn't be talking about the budget and taxes and revenue this session. It's not a budget year, were it not for COVID. So this is a natural transition from COVID. Because of federal infusion of federal dollars, because of inflation, because of the supply chain, we've seen more tax revenue come in. So the state is awash in cash. It's already, we've had a trigger of refunds, personal tax refunds. Phil Giaquinta, is there's some people saying we need to go further with a tax, permanent tax cut beyond what is done now. Is that the, is, does that make sense to you?
Well, I think, and I, as I said the other day, I think it's a good time to kind of take stock of where we are as a state. And I always think as legislators, you know, we're sent here to solve problems. So let's kind of see, you know, where are we deficient as a state? And I think one of those issues is certainly is health care. We're going to find out a lot of things, I think, coming out of the pandemic, things that we need to work on. You know, we have unhealthy folks in this state. You know, what can we do? We the cost of health care. I know the speaker and I have talked about that a lot, and I know he is interested in that as well. But the cost of health care is very high in this state with prescription drugs, those type of things. There's a lot of things I think that we can really do that we can actually invest in the state, invest in people. We have a real opportunity because, as you mentioned, the federal dollars under President Biden and those things that came in. And I think we got off to a good start, frankly, with the budget from last year. But there's just a lot of opportunities there that we can do. I had mentioned one specifically, including a child tax credit that we, you know, we'd like to talk about a little bit more as session goes on. So there's some real opportunities. I would like to see us invest those dollars in the state in programs that I think that, that can really help Hoosiers.
Rod Bray, this may be another one of those issues, as was we just discussed with the restrictions on employee vaccination requirements. This may be another area where you and your counterparts in the House may see things subtle differences. From what I hear, your caucus is not necessarily as enthusiastic as moving forward with a tax permanent tax decrease as perhaps, again, your House counterparts. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's probably a fair assessment. We've got a lot of conversations to have about that, and we've been having them now for several weeks, in fact, a couple of months, and pretty healthy conversation to figure it out. And, you know, Representative Giaquinta just made a really good point about, you know, there are some other things out there, there's some needs that the state continues to have that we also need to address. I think the thing that first occurs to me is that this is obviously not a budget year. We are blessed with the fact that resilience of Hoosiers and how well they've done, and that is showing up in the revenue coming into the state of Indiana from a couple of different sources. But because of that fact, doesn't mean that we immediately go out and spend it. We need to do that in a very thoughtful and planned way. This is not a budget year, and so to do that in a way that is piecemeal, either spending it or doing tax, coming up with some permanent tax cuts, gives me a little bit of pause. And the other thing I'll say with regard to this, the nice thing is we've got the automatic tax, and we're paying $545 million back to taxpayers, plus another $545 million that's going to pay an pension obligation that we already have. So that's fantastic news. And but when it comes to trying to figure out what we're going to do with the rest of this, let's be thoughtful about it. Let's consider that we do have headwinds in our economy. With all the cash that we have in our economy now, once that burns off, it's going to be difficult. At least I'm not nearly smart enough to figure out where we will be when that happens. We have inflation issues that are really rearing their head. We have workforce challenges. We've got supply chain issues, all of which I think are going to be protracted and be around for a little while, even when this cash burns off. So I think we would be we're going to talk about those where that money needs to go and if we need to deploy it now or have more permanent tax cuts. But it's a better conversation to have in the scheme of an entire budget, which we will do next year.
And Greg Taylor, I'm guessing you would agree. This is a time not to institute a permanent tax cut, but perhaps further invest in areas of Indiana that need shoring up because of the pandemic or other areas where there might be opportunities for growth.
Yeah, I think it's very indicative of where we've been in the past that Indiana has been in a good financial position, and we're always discussing what the problems could be going forward. But it seems like to me that every time we have a problem, there's always somebody who comes to our aid, being the federal government, like was done under the Biden administration. If it wasn't for the influx of cash from the federal government, we would not have been able to actually put the revenue back into the budget like we wanted to. So we did some good things, but I have a different priority. My priority is to get Hoosiers making enough money so that they can take care of their family. Under the policies that we've had for the last 20 years, the Hoosiers have not seen the increase in take-home pay like the rest of the country. And how dare we be in a position to have a $5 billion surplus, yet people can't work one job to take care of their family.
Well, I want to move on to education, but before I do, it would be unfair not to let Speaker Houston say, weigh in on this issue, since it is, in fact, your caucus and the House Ways and Means Committee chair that has suggested that a tax break, additional tax break, is appropriate. Why does it make sense now, despite what your colleagues have suggested?
Well, first of all, you know, anytime you can return money back to Hoosiers, it's there. Air money, and we should never forget that. So, you know, when we talk about investing, that's government investing, I'm a lot more confident letting Hoosiers invest in what they need. I also think, you know, as it's mentioned multiple times, inflation is real. That impacts Hoosier families. And you know, it's great we're giving back every single Hoosier a taxpayer $125. That can help with with you know, the additional increase in cost at the grocery store and the gas station and those types of things. But, you know, look, it's not up to us to hoard the people's money. It's up to us to give it back to them, give it back to them responsibly. We can do it. We're staring at up to a $5 billion end-of-the-year surplus, a $2 billion structural surplus. There is more than enough dollars available to give people a healthy return back to them and be prudent. As John, as you know, I mean, I've had the opportunity to author a state budget. I'm not going to cut off our nose to spite our face. We want to think long term. It's not about 2022. It's about long term growth too. But you know, I think it's, you know, there's a fundamental difference in opinion, I think. And do you believe it's the government's money or do you believe it's the people's money? We believe it's the people's money.
Well, you gave me the transition talking about state spending to talk about education, which I said we would do before we wrap up here. That is the bulk of state spending, as a matter of fact. So how's that for a segue? Phil Giaquinta, there seems to be a lot of concern, not just about dollars going into education, but what's being taught. There are concerns about critical race theory, and we've heard some state officials talk about Marxist ideologies that have been introduced into the classroom. Is there alarm bell? Are there alarm bells going off either because you think things that are being taught that shouldn't be, or because people may intrude into an educational process that doesn't need intrusion? Phil Giaquinta.
I heard you, John. Thank you. I think the issue really, I think it boils down to is input from parents and their access to what is being taught in schools, and how can parents be more involved? You know, what can they do? And I there are ways, obviously, for parents to voice their opinions, whether it's at school board meetings. They can run for school board. There are certainly are currently, as we're set up now, I believe there are parental involvement in curriculum decisions as we speak. You know, there's the way that it's set up currently. So I'm certainly all for anything that would allow, you know, obviously parents' opinions of this type of matter. You know, I personally will tell you that I've never been contacted or never been phone emailed from parents that are concerned about any particular book. So to me, that signals that either they're working directly with their school board or their superintendent, or they have their own avenues in which to convey their opinions on matters or displeasure on things. So I kind of feel like and I think there was I didn't see all the testimony that took place in the Senate yesterday, but I do know that there were some folks that testified that said the system as we have now is working, that they've been able to voice their opinions on matters, and things have changed. And so I'm really not sure exactly. I don't know, are we searching for a problem here?
First we have to figure out what CRT is, and then we have to figure out if it's being taught, I guess. And I know, Senator Bray, you mentioned that's tough because of 10 different interpretations. All right. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I know a lot has gone unsaid, and we will have you back, I promise, to continue the conversation. Thank you all for joining us. Again, my guests have been House Speaker Todd Houston of Fishers, House Minority Leader Phil Giaquinta of Fort Wayne, Senate President Pro Tem Roderick Bray of Martinsville, and Senate Minority Leader Greg Taylor of Indianapolis. The overall theme of this week's show, which is the more things change, the more they stay the same, now continues with the return of Indiana lawmakers' greatest ever news analyst, Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. Ed, I feel totally comfortable saying that because you're the only news analyst we've ever had. So thank you for coming back for another season. This session, and I think we got a flavor of this with the roundtable discussion, there's a lot of moving pieces and parts here. To mix metaphors, this jigsaw puzzle is even more complicated than usual. Am I right?
Yeah, we've been doing this for 30 years, John, and every year, you know, you've got different kinds of issues, different kinds of components, different kinds of players. This year, we've got some really interesting elements. You've got an executive versus legislative feud that's been simmering now for about a year, dates back to last year, dealing with the emergency powers, but it really is effectively involving all powers. And you've got a lame duck governor, you've got a legislature with a lot of newer members that's kind of feeling its way, feeling its oats. And it also transcends party. You know, you'd think that with supermajority control by Republicans in both chambers and with the governor's office as well, that they'd all be on the same page, but certainly not the case. And I think part of the reason is that you've got a much more socially conservative legislature than you have a governor. You've got the Democrats trying to drive a wedge between the more moderate governor and the socially conservative legislators. And those social conservatives in the legislature, particularly in the House, are really gaining influence. You've got a situation, you know, almost like what we just talked about with the governor being more moderate than the legislature. The leaders of the legislature that you just had on were more moderate than their members, but they also realized that they have to reflect their caucus. I think in the past, you had leaders stand up a little bit more to the members, but with the growing numbers, it's going to be very difficult, and they are much more reflective of the caucus than they were in the past.
So how does this end? We're almost out of time. How does it end? That's why we pay you big bucks.
Well, you've got to watch for the individual rights issues and how that plays out. You've got the gun issue. You've got the school social conservative issues.
Maybe abortion.
And all that. Yeah, and you also have some other things that are, you know, less on the surface, some things dealing with agency authority and all that that we're trying to bring under control. So we're going to have to watch to see how it plays out. But remember, the primary this year is much earlier than usual. It's May 3rd, and you've got legislators running for the first time in new districts. You've got a lot of new challengers coming in, and there's going to be a lot of people paying attention in the legislature to what's happening with what's going on with the filing of new candidates.
Well, and I'll tell you, I'm glad we have you around to help make sense of it all. So thank you for coming back this season. Looking forward to hearing your insights as we progress. Thanks so much. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, we examine the 2022 State of the State Address with the man who delivers it, Governor Eric Holcomb. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.